Welcome everybody to a equinoctial vibrant. Super excited about tonight's hangout. As Cucumber in the chat so wisely said, this is the part of YouTube that is nice. It's a really cool community. I see everyone piling into the chat. I love you guys. Super excited. It's my birthday week. Technically, the day is Friday. I'm going to be 35. And it's just everything's lining up for me. I got that birthday chi, solar return, good energy. And lucky for me, because my name means luck, I was able to get Eileen in on kind of a last minute request. And she was able to jump in, even though it's her third podcast of the day. She's in high demand. And one of my favorite wingmen to ever bring on to Vibrant, Kyle Denton of Tippecanoe Herbs, is here. So what's up, everybody? And welcome, Eileen. Last time we did this, it was my birthday last year. So I kind of appreciate you being my birthday buddy, since this is you're my favorite guest to have on. I just don't like to abuse the privilege.
I love that. I love being able to celebrate your birthday with you and a new friend, Kyle, who I haven't met yet.
Yes, it's great to meet you, Eileen, and awesome to be here. Chance, thanks so much for the invitation. I am feeling so blessed to be on the screen with two mentors that have elevated my herbal practice to a new dimension, and I have such respect for the work that you do, and I'm so excited to be talking about it tonight. So yeah, it's great to be here.
Nice.
It is so great. Honestly, the gift that I wanted to give myself was to witness you two have some interaction. Kyle, you know, introducing to Eileen what it is you do and all the variety of air sign, Aquarian, weird, automatic, knowing how to do stuff that you've got going on, what you've integrated from, you know, the biofield anatomy into your practice, all that kind of stuff. It'd be really fun to talk about. So kind of just going to let you take it.
Sweet. Thanks. Yeah. So yeah, I'm an herbalist. I just call myself a community herbalist, so that way there's not a lot of extra baggage. But I have a long history of clinical work, and I do a lot of medicine making. I have a shop in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. If you ever come to Milwaukee for whatever reason, please let me know. I would love to show you around. And so one of the things that I learned about your work from Chance a long time ago, got your tuning forks a year and a half ago or something like that, started playing around with them. And it was fun at first, and just, you know, seeing what I could feel. I ended up really falling in love with the Sonic Slider. And then last year or 2 years ago, I got all of my staff a Sonic Slider for Christmas. Like that was a great, so whenever they're like, oh, I got a headache or something, just like, get the Sonic Slider.
Use the forks, Luke.
Use the forks.
And so, you know, I have your book behind me here. I have all of your podcasts. I've pretty much listened to them all. I just love the way that you put out so much work, and the encouragement that everyone has the capability of, you know, learning these skills. And I really appreciate that you have created your own school to teach the way that you do it. And I also appreciate Chance, the way that he has kind of taken, an approach where he's integrated some of the things that he's doing as well with tarot cards and Qigong, things like that. So I just decided I'm going to start integrating tuning into my clinical practice. And it was, you know, I have in my work, it wasn't a big jump for me because I have an understanding already of working with the causal field. Like in my in-person sessions, when I'm testing for the remedies, I'm actually writing down the herb that I think that they might need, putting it on a piece of paper and putting it in their hand while I'm feeling their pulse. And, you know, there's a jump sometimes, there's a shy away, and then everything settles in and I try to find, is this the right remedy? And it can't really be explained through anything other than a cosmology that has this causal etheric field integrated into that model. And so when it came to the tuning forks, I just picked them up and I started working with my clients in a way where I am now. I mean, I could sit with somebody in a session for 90 minutes and we can be talking about their other things. And I got herbs on my mind and I'm testing. But now when I got this extra measure of a tuning fork the work that you've done has introduced, I can find ways that I would never have thought of perceiving in a diagnostic way. And additionally, I am really, really excited about the sonic anatomy of plants, and because I'm incorporating that into my tuning sessions. And one of the things that I do is I'm taking like plants. I have my I call it homunculus guy based on the chat of chance. I have my homunculus guy. It's basically at my practitioner table where I'm imagining the person there. And as we're going through the session, I'm taking the herbs that I have here in my office that I think that might be really helpful for them. I do ways of testing them through the causal, through the etheric way. And then I'm putting them onto this homunculus man or the table, the practitioner's table. And I'm actually bringing the scattered biophotonic field into the herbs, which I will then either prepare as a tea or prepare as a tincture, most usually a tincture. I put them into what's called a percolation cone and just pour a little bit of brandy over them. And then the person has a bottle that I ship to them, or they come pick it up right away, that is made with herbs that have been infused with the practice, the actual session. And then that way, and then also with my practice of herbalism, I'm not so much the apologist for allopathic, you know, or take this herb for this thing. I really feel strongly that just like with biofield tuning in the way that both of you have shown, it is a way of integrating, you know, taking our own lessons and integrating them ourselves, finding that story for ourselves. So that's how I work with the herbs. The herbs are there to assist us through these changes. And it's been amazing. I have had nothing but incredible success since I've been doing that. And I've only been doing it professionally with, you know, clients and for just a few months. So I'm very, very much a novice when it comes to the tuning in a clinical setting. But I have my, chops when it comes to the clinician stuff. So it's been really fun. I feel like I've had enough initiation into the mysteries of tuning that I'm like, wow, there's some weird stuff going on here. So much so that it's opened up the possibility that there is way, way, way more to learn. And, you know, you walk in, it's like walking through a door and seeing 100 more doors, and then walking through one of those doors and seeing that there's 100 more. And I know just by nature of my age and everything like that, that's just the way it goes. That's the way, if you're interested in learning, you'll always find more and more and more. But it's beautiful to have this, I don't know, this kind of like childlike view of biofield tuning. And I don't know, being in this room right now with y'all is so, I'm very excited. And I'm excited in general, because when I'm tuning people, it just, those are the days that I feel, those are my peak days of the week. Those are the days that I feel really, really, really in tune with myself too. So there's more to it than just what we're offering. There's definitely a lot for me that I like to claim too. So I guess that's the beginning. That's it in a nutshell.
That's super cool. That, you know, I've heard lots of stories from different people about how they have figured out how to take the principles of tuning and integrate it into other things like that. I know that guy was a weed grower, and his mom was super disapproving about the fact that he was a weed grower, and he felt like he was bringing his own guilt and shame, even though he loved weed and he loved growing it, his own guilt and shame into the process. And so he started playing my recordings for his weed plants. So specifically, I have one on guilt and shame, and absolutely noticed a difference in the quality of the herb, and the other people did as well when they smoked it. So plants respond really beautifully to sound, to the vibes, because they speak the same vibrational language that we do. So it's such a wonderful way to communicate with them and work with them, because you're, you know, at that level of vibrational communication, it's all one language. animals too, you know, speak the same vibrational language. So I always love seeing, you know, how different people get inspired to take these principles about the field and integrate it into the work that they're doing. It's super cool. And there is no end of discovery. I mean, I just went through a whole wave of discovery about how I discovered that you can access your star chart, your zodiacal chart through your biofield. And I'm working with an apprentice right now who is, we're tuning the star charts of people, which is wild. I mean, we you know, bring up the chart on a computer and then cast a circle and go around and you can feel every heavenly body that's on the chart. You can feel it in the biofield. The 12 bands of the biofield convert into the 12 houses of the zodiac. And that's been an incredibly fascinating exploration that I feel like I've only scratched the surface of. The next thing that I'm planning on doing is, so in the biofield theory, your electrical system is a torus. It's a bubble, right? It extends about 6 feet around you. But sort of lesser known is that it's really kind of like Russian dolls and that we're nested within Taurus, with, you know, Tauri, basically infinitely. And I had an interesting experience with my husband this past week because he injured a knee, his left knee, a really long time ago. And when he works too much, he can strain himself and it starts bothering him again. And he just really kind of did a number on himself. And he was limping around and I was like, we got to fix you somehow. And so, because I'd worked on his knee, I'd worked on his hip, but it wasn't quite doing it. Well, I decided to visit the next torus out. So coming in from below the feet, you know, it's like you have an energy center below the feet, what we call the Earth Star and biofield tuning. But if you go about 3 feet further down, you find another energy center that I call the deep earth. And actually, you can just keep going. And so the polarization of each bubble as it goes out is reversed. And so I went and explored this area of this next torus out and discovered that that particular torus was totally jammed up. It was completely jammed up. It was all like misfiring and not moving and in wrong relationship to the primary bubble. And so I sorted it out. I just hung out there and got it running right. And he got up from that adjustment and he was able to walk normally. For me holding, and I did the whole session just with the sonic slider. Lately, I've just been like, I do like an entire session just with the sonic slider in the field and on the body, because you can. Right. So now I'm like, okay, I want to actually like get a practice buddy and go to the, you know, the second, the third, the fourth. I'm going to go all the way to the 33rd one. That's where my intuition is telling me to go. And what happens when we investigate each one of these radiating, expanding toruses? So I have no end of fascination and inspiration, and I've been doing this for 28 years now, and it's still beckoning me down different, you know, pathways of possibility.
Wow, that's like an entire Saturn cycle, you know, 28 years of experience. So it's almost like you're reaching a point where coming back to where you started with new eyes. Does it ever feel that way?
Well, certainly going into this zodiac tuning felt like the sort of mind blown, right? Because the whole process of discovering the biofield and sort of creating biofield tuning was like, my mind was blown over and over and over again. I was like, this is so fascinating. This is so curious. This is so weird. And I love that, right? I love, in a world where it feels like everything has been explored, to be exploring territory that's sort of hidden in plain view and like what you can do in that, those subtle realms. I feel like we're just scratching the surface really of what is possible with tinkering with the biofield for good, because they're certainly out there tinkering with the biofield for not good. So it's really up to us to counterbalance that, I think.
I actually learned how to do tuning with a sonic slider. It kind of reminds me, maybe pardon the analogy, but when I learned how to play the guitar, I have the guitar that I learned how to play on still, and I go back to it and I'll play it and I'll be like, how did I ever get a tone out of this? And I don't mean I say pardon the comparison because your instrument is excellent, the one that you've manufactured. But so I learned how to tune on a sonic slider because when I started tuning, I had an infant child, and if I would hit the fork, he would wake up. And because he's just so interested, he loves tuning things too, by the way. And he has such a great frequency. When he hits a fork, I can never get the type of ring that's so true. And it's just like so clumsy with his big old hands, ting. And it's just such a perfect ring because he doesn't have any of the nonsense in his true to nature system. So learning how to do it with the sonic slider, I was thinking, wow, I'm doing this based off of feel. There's not a audible component to this at all. And so when I added the audible component, it was just like, you know, it accelerated. But I have this poster. Chance, could you make me big for a second, please? This is the monochord that I just learned about from Robert Fudd. And Renaissance era kind of trying to make something about the encyclopedia. I hang this in my room here because the monochord represents, this is kind of like a sonic anatomy. And I don't know if you're familiar with this. I don't claim to have much expertise on this at all. I really appreciate the idea that you were talking about with the nesting toroids that we have here. We have, you know, one cosmic egg shape. So what this represents is musica mundana, which is the music of the spheres as it's relating to us humans, as opposed to the musica humana. And then there's musica instrumentale, which is like the instruments that we make to try to recreate nature. And then right here at the top, it's just one single string. And it's so complicated. There's the notes, there's the elements, there's the planets, there's angels, angelic realms, and everything like that. But it's just one string. Behind me, I have a 12-string guitar, and it's way less complicated than this one stringed instrument. And up here is the divine hand of God, the creator, that tunes it. And it reminds me of so many things. It reminds me of when a string is in vibrational pattern, there's the nadis, you know, the serpentine like movement vibrating, but singular string that represents like the shishumna or your line that goes to your crater. And so I have this on my wall to remind me about the potential for macrocosmic, microcosmic, from the individual to the plants to the cosmos, as you were talking about with the astrological. And so I guess a question that I have for you is, considering the second hermetic axiom, you know, of as within, so without, as above, so below, and noticing that, you know, when we tune ourselves, that there is something that we're maybe that we have a there is a reflection that might be happening in heaven as well. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on that, or if you have any experience with, I don't know, I'm not talking about like necessarily like cosmological shifts, but just a greater macrocosmic shifts that occur when working with the intention of working macroscopically, I guess.
Well, it's hard to really know, right? I mean, with all of the things that are going on in the world. But what that does make me think of is kind of a funny thing, and that is during COVID, what I found was that the primary forks that I was using, 174 hertz, 528, and 417, weren't getting through like this sort of thick layer of fear and deception that descended on the collective consciousness of humanity. And I remember thinking that I needed a bigger gun. I needed something that was going to like break through that rigidity that, you know, hadn't really been there up to that point. And one of my favorite forks is this 144 hertz weighted fork. And this work, I call it the Yang grandmother. And it's like a little drill. Like when I get into really stuck stuff in the field and I go in there, it's like, ying, 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 and it just really moves through what's in the field. In fact, I used to have a technique where I had a Lemurian crystal. And when I hit these spots that were particularly stubborn, I would hold the crystal in the spot and then I would put a wedge fork on top of it. And that created sufficient vibration to disrupt.
I've done that before. It's like an intuitive idea. It makes sense to do that. Wow.
Well, I mean, just from a science perspective, a crystal is an amplifier. Right. So the frequency goes in and it comes out like amplified. So it worked. It amplified the forks I had enough to make them do that. But then when I got the 144 and I started using this, I never picked up the crystal again. Like I don't even know where it is. And this was such a staple for me, this Lemurian crystal, but this 144 took the place of that. So I remember thinking, well, the 144 weighted is pretty busty, throughy of things. So let me try a 144 unweighted, which I created. But when I first got it and first started using it, it was a beast. Like it would make the wonkiest sounds. I mean, it was alarming. I even put a warning label on it. I was like, this is not a beginner fork. And I gave it to each of my 11 teachers and had them try it out. And without exception, all of them were like, Eileen, what are you thinking with this fork? Because it's alarming. It's disturbing. It's all over the place. And I was like, no, you know, just hang in there with it and you'll tame it and it will tame you and you'll end up with a better relationship with it. And that's exactly what happened. But what's so interesting was within a year of it being out, it no longer had that wild all over the place thing, even for people who were new with it. So there was something about bringing that frequency into the collective and using it together over time that tamed it, that made it, that changed it, quite frankly. Like it took on a different character, even for people who were new to it. So that's a little weird, right? Like, well, how did that happen?
Maybe you intended to, maybe it's just synchronistic, but I feel like you kind of answered Kyle's question about tuning the heavens when we tune a human. I often have recounted the story of the hula hoop analogy where I used to go to a lot of music festivals. A few girls would hula hoop at these things and they were pretty good at it. But then as years went by, the things that they could do got just out of control. And then new girls that started hula hooping that had never done it before would jump up to the skill level of the experts in like record time. Whereas the initiators, they took a few years to get there. And I think that the collective unconscious or that Jungian idea, the heavens, there's something to that where as we develop a particular skill or knowledge base, it's akin to mining neural pathways in this collective consciousness. And some of us are up at the wall on the frontier chipping away. And then new people are like, oh, I want to go that way. And they can just kind of walk or jog or maybe even sprint all the way to the wall that everybody else is at.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we talk about the morphic field of biofield tuning and how it informs new students. I mean, when I think back at like all the years that I spent mapping the biofield, all the years I spent like wondering what the heck I was doing, you know, like this is really weird, you know, because for a really long time, I was the only one on the planet doing this weird thing with tuning forks. And that was a hard hump to get over, you know, because it is so odd. And now there's thousands of people doing it, so it doesn't feel as odd as it used to. But new people are able to pick it up faster, you know, than my first students, because that 100th monkey concept, although somebody told me that 100th monkey story was debunked, but it's still useful for explaining.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, how things do get into the collective consciousness. I mean, even with sports, right? We see that in all kinds of extreme sports, what people are doing now versus 20, 30 years ago, like snowboarding, right? When they first started, like, oh, we're going to jump. Now they're like, burr. So the human mind and body, I'm just always so amazed by what humans can do and how we build on those came before us.
Well, there was a time where a 5-minute mile was insane, and then somebody ran a 4-minute mile, and now that's like the standard for the top people, and there's people that are under 4 minutes, which is totally insane to think about. I want to kick a question to both of you guys, though. One thing that I continually notice, especially as I get some mileage on tuning experience, is that there seems to be themes, like clusters of certain types of issues show up at around the same time as each other. Often I'll do like all the clients that I do in the same week will be working on their version of a similar type of idea. And as the Equinox was coming on, I have been seeing a lot of people that they didn't even know that this was the thing they needed to work on. You know, sometimes they just come to you and they just say, tell me what's going on, you know? And as we're in this Aries season or entering it, the getting startedness question, it keeps coming up. Like people that want to switch what it is they're doing for a living typically, or to just get over inhibition to kick off new practices or, you know, find their way on a new path. And that resistance is different for different people, but there are certain, you know, kind of key insights that can apply to all of us with that. And I wondered if Eileen could share some getting startedness insights as someone who's started multiple businesses successfully. And then Kyle can maybe, you know, add his thoughts and potentially even herbal, you know, boosters for that type of thing.
Well, I would say, Chance, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday that I did a tuning for. And I, as I was feeling into her energy, just using like a right and left brain metaphor, like her right brain felt so creative and so sparkly and so youthful and so bursting with life, like what I call a messy creative. And her left brain was like those machines that pump oil, and she had turned into something like colonialism, Rockefeller education, had turned her into a cog that was terrified to color outside the lines. And she had become almost OCD in her need to like make everything right and perfect and inside the lines. And meanwhile, her soul or spirit is like this incredibly like the opposite, right? Just kind of spilling out. And I recognize that because I'm like that. I'm what I call a messy creative. I'm not a perfectionist, not at all. I'm an idealist through and through, but I'm not a perfectionist. And I'm totally willing to jump in and make a fool of myself, dare to suck, you know, just create a mess. I'm totally comfortable with that because I understand that that's a creative process, is that you have to be willing to do things wrong, to learn things the hard way, you know, to have some false starts, and not have the word failure even exist in your mind, because everything for me is a science experiment. I'm like, let's try this and see what happens. You know, let's tinker with it. Let's play around with it. No, my first version of tuning the human biofield, my first draft, it sucked. It was horrible. I mean, oh, but I wrote it. I actually wrote the entire first draft. And then from there, I was able to work it and work it and work it and work it. Everything that I created in the beginning, you know, you're learning things the hard way. So I think you have to really not be afraid of making messes. That's what I think. I think that's a really big part of it, is to take all of this. We've all been so traumatized with this fear of doing things wrong. So that, you know, like this person I worked with, we're like so afraid to be messy. We're so afraid to be wrong. We're so afraid to do it wrong that we don't do anything. And that's, you know, that's a sorry state of affairs, because we're built to be creative beings. You know, that we create all the time anyway. This is what we do. We're creative. And I think that I just want to give people permission to be a messy creative. I, you know, the only reason why I have why I have this line of tuning forks, I got 10 forks that I sell. I've got like at least 120 discarded prototypes that I was like, oh, that one sounds like a good idea. Let me make that frequency. And I play with it for a while. I'm like, meh. Right? And I'm not afraid to like try something out and not like it and not want to use it. So yeah, so that's what I would say. I just get over your perfectionism and your fear and get messy, and it's okay.
That's exactly it. That is totally it. I have a fun story about one of these clients and getting startedness from last week. And I hope you're enjoying the integration process, buddy, if you hear this. But they basically, it's a similar thing, exactly what you describe. I think this is what holds people back the most, is fear of doing it wrong or thinking that there's a right way to do it. And what we came across in his like memory banks was that he was really into drawing as a kid. And this was not really at the forefront of his mind at all coming into the session. But we found this specific moment where he had been drawing for years just for fun, making cartoons and everything. And I don't know, it was maybe around the year nine years old or something, that his mother put him into a art class, like a drawing class. And great, that's a great idea, you know, to get training, get new inspiration that way. But the experience seemed to have had an effect of the comparison from how he liked to do things to what is the right way to do things. And that put a bit of a break on his willingness to initiate doing things his own way. And he hadn't made that connection yet. And it was a pretty cool connection that the replacement belief about it all that I think anyone could take on right now, regardless of what might be in their memory field, this can override a lot of that stuff, is my way is the right way. And you can, that sounds like blasphemy to some people, but the case is that, like, if you are a trustworthy person, if you're a person of moral integrity and you can trust yourself, then there's no reason why your way shouldn't be the right way. That's totally fine. And as you said, you can always make adjustments, but you have to take steps. But the funny thing about finding the kid who loved drawing in his energy field was that he realized after we went through that just a few days prior, his mom had dug up an old notebook of drawings from that age that had been lost, like forgotten in storage, and gave it to him just out of the blue. So it was like, there's these external world reflections that match what we're doing in the inner world. And that happens so much. And it's one of the things that tells me we're on to the real juice of like how life, the psyche, and spirit and matter intersect and reflect. Super cool.
Yeah, I see that all the time, this weird alignment with the inner, and I guess it's not weird, you know, but it definitely, it's all one, right? As within, so without. And this idea that the our star chart, like the stars up there, like they're right here, right? When people talk about, well, how can the heavenly bodies inform us? But they absolutely, they're electromagnetic, and they absolutely electromagnetically imprinted on us when we were born, you know, into our biofields, and they're close. They're like right around us. So I think, you know, to come back to your question, Kyle, I think there is really no way that we can affect the inside and affect humanity in a significant way and not have it be a reciprocal relationship with the larger cosmos.
Thanks. Yeah, that makes sense. So I have some ideas about getting started too, because I also have a business and I have an idealist personality. And one of the things about me is I'm also not a perfectionist, but the idealist can be weighed down by perfectionism in time. So one of the things that I think about is a plant called blue vervain, which I put in my astro herbal zodiacal scape. I put it as an Aquarius herb because specifically this is the herb that I would put in the right ankle of the body. Something that is the angle between our spiritual uprightness, that we have this advantage as, you know, God's creation, that separates us from the animals. And then also that right ankle is the thing that, you know, we have to pick up and make the right move. We have to make the right step. And that could also be the place where people in Aries time of year also trying to feel like they've got to get started. Like, how do I make a move? How do I make a move? So blue vervain comes to mind. Another thing that comes to mind is.
How do you spell that one?
Vervain. Blue vervain. Blue vervain is also a great helpful plant for releasing tension in the neck and the head. It's a nervine. It's not sedative, but it's helpful for, to me, it's the list. I call it the list maker plant. It's the plant for the person who likes to make all kinds of lists and has like, they also like to make lists for other people too. I'm a blue vervain person myself. I like to make lists for other people. I also like to make the list in the way that that's it. It's all, I call it the plate spinner plant. Look at the signatures of the of this plant. Here's one. I'm spinning this plate. I don't want my partner to do the dishes because every time they do them, they put them away in the wrong spot. I don't want I don't want my partner to take their kid to the PTA meeting because I want to make sure that, you know, that that they talk to the teacher about the thing. All these plates. So we're spinning. Somebody's spinning all these plates. And so blue vervain says, look, it's okay. It's not. There's nothing wrong with somebody who has that idealistic type. It's just like, let's focus on moving ahead and moving forward. It has a very, very bitter flavor. And the flavor of bitterness brings us back into our body. It stimulates all of our stuff that's going on in our periphery back into rest and digest parasympathetic mode. And it's a magical plant too. It's very tall and erect. And the way that it grows is that it has a long, long stem without much going on. And then once it gets to the flower, it's just like a whole bunch. So that's to say, like, it has, there's a lot of gears up here, but they're not engaged and they're not on the road. We don't have our ankle on the road. So that's one. And that brings to mind also, when starting something, it's really nice to have the receptivity to other people for criticism. Right. And so that's another thing that we might be able to stop ourselves from progressing forward. And so some plants that come to mind for that might be just like softening plants like marshmallow or Solomon seal. And another thing that comes to mind, too, is just scaling your stuff. So Eileen writes a book. Well, how I want to write a book. I really do. I'm writing a book. What am I doing? I'm just chipping away. I'm just I put something in. I have a thing that I'm going to accomplish that day. And I try to get it done that day. And if it doesn't get done that day, it gets done the next day. But it's instead of this huge vision, this huge practice, this huge business, this all the stuff that I want to do, it's just little goal after little goal after little goal. And then when you scale it, you don't have to worry about debt. You don't have to worry about getting ahead of yourself in a way that you're not prepared for. You are laying the foundations upon more and more so that you have a strong foundation to stand on. And when it's time for that draft to fall over, as it will, you still have the foundations at the bottom to put it back up again. And that's a really, really, really important part of getting started. And so for me and the Aries too, the Aries love this because they love to start things. And but they're not always at the finish line, are they? So that's the here's one more. Borage for courage is what I say. Borage for courage. So show your courage, be courageous. And this is a plant that I love to work with as a flower essence because it has this beautiful vibratory aspect that helps with our courage. And just a drop of borage flower essence really helps you feel like you can face things in your heart centered, like what you want to follow with your heart that actually you might be afraid to do. And then borage as like a medicinal herb, or, you know, if you want to cook with it, it's a edible culinary herb too. It's really supportive of your adrenals. And so if you're getting started in something, let's say you're going to grad school or you're writing a new book or something like that, these types of things tax you in other departments of your life. And so sometimes you might feel like you're getting a little burnt out, and it's really nice to set up yourself for the long run with, you know, herbs that will help with, you know, your endocrine system and so on. So a couple ideas. That's a cool question. Yeah. I also noticed that too with Aries people going on right now. Lots of where do I go? Stuckness.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's the biggest thing that I say that I treat with biofield tuning is stuckness. You know, if I have to boil it down, or like, what is the one thing that everybody who comes in to see me suffering from? And that's that they're stuck in some way, and they're stuck inside their own wiring, basically. And I think that biofield tuning is a great tool for helping people to get unstuck. I remember when I used to be in clinic all day, you know, I'd come home the end of the day and I'd feel like a tow truck driver. Like, I pulled people out of ditches all day, helped them get their rubber on the road. Because a lot of this looping, when you lay down all your wires in these loops, and then even if you want to do something different, you're just moving along those loops. And the cool thing is that we can come with an attuning fork and like grab the loop and like unloop it and wire you straight, so that all of a sudden now, you know, we've given you better pathways. So if you combine, you know, some borage and some of these other things with tuning, that can take you a long way. You know, I also, there's one other thing that I also thought of, and that is there's a Japanese term called Kaizen. I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but it's basically about doing things in small steps. Back in the days of Nightingale Conant and their CD and tape box sets of personal growth programs, they used to send out promotional letters. And I got one day, and on the cover of the envelope, it said, "Is your thinking too big causing you to fail?" And I, you know, I'm a big thinker, and there was a long time there where I was stuck before I started getting tuned, honestly. And I was stuck not being able to go anywhere, not having the money, not having the means, not have seeing the way through, but also dreaming really big. And I found that question so compelling that I left the unopened envelope on my bedside table for like a week and just kept asking myself that question: is your thinking too big causing you to fail? And that was a really big turning point for me, actually, because I think a lot of times people, they want to get right to the thing, you know, and there's a lot of small steps involved that might feel tedious or whatever. People want to make a quantum leap, you know, into a different reality. And most of the time that doesn't happen. You know, it is these small sort of switchbacky kind of rocky, narrow path that you have to walk on. In order to do the things that you want to do. And there's often places that are scary and require courage. You know, there's actually, Chance, have you done any research into the symbolism involved in this April 8th eclipse? Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, not specifically symbolism, but I'm in the path of totality out here. And the last big eclipse that crossed this path was in August of 2017. And I've told this story a bunch of times, so I'll just say it briefly. On the day of that eclipse, I saw beach ball sized white orbs come out of the ground, like they're passing through the matter, and fly around in the sky 15 feet above my head with two other witnesses present. You know, we're stone cold sober. And then later that day, the eclipse happened. So I'm like going to be looking over my shoulder every direction.
Looking through day. The orbs. Wow. What's that? That's really wild.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it, but I don't know what it was, but they were about this big. There was one that came up and then was kind of floating around. And then a couple more came up and they like, it was like one of those shell games where they're switching places and then they became one orb and then they split up again into multiple and then flew away off behind the trees. The whole thing was over in about a minute, but it was gnarly.
Did you take any pictures?
Oh no, it's like it was happening so quick and we were just, whoa, what's that? And then it was over, you know?
Wow. That's really wild. Well, I'm going to be looking for those orbs on the next eclipse.
Are you going to be around the path of totality?
I am. I'm going to be back at Confluence, where I tuned during the last eclipse in October, in the lunar eclipse. What's interesting is that Sovereignty Ranch, where Confluence is happening, is 33 miles from the square center of the October eclipse and now this April eclipse. And where they cross in Texas, we're very close to dead center of that. And I will be tuning during the eclipse. But the theme, what I wanted to mention about this, as I've dug into understanding some of the stuff that's going on, there's some very interesting, odd things. Like when it comes into Texas, it goes over a city called Jonah that's near Austin. And then in the path of totality, there's only actually two Ninevehs, but there's seven total Ninevehs that are either in or close to the path of the eclipse.
Okay, and, so last one in 2017, there were like that many Salems.
Salems, exactly. There were seven Salems. Well, actually, there were two that were totally in totality, and then there were five that were close, right? And so you got the Salem. Salem means peace. And there's a lot here. I don't want to go into all that because I am actually doing a Sonic Sunday on Easter, and I'm going to do a presentation on all of these different things. But the story made me go look up the story of Jonah because I didn't know the story of Jonah. And it's actually kind of a cool story. So Nineveh was like Babylon or like the United States now. You know, everybody had like become debauched and, not following God and not being well behaved. And so God says to Jonah, he said, Jonah, I want you to go into Nineveh and I want you to preach to people and I want you to get them to repent. And Jonah was like, no, I'm not doing that. And he gets on a boat with some of his buddies and they go out to sea. But then they hit all of these storms and they're like, what the heck is going on? And Jonah's like, actually, it's me. God asked me to go preach in Nineveh and I didn't want to. And so now all these storms are happening. And so his buddies are like, Jonah, what the heck? And they threw him off the boat. And then he gets swallowed by the whale. And he's in the belly of the whale for 3 days. And then the whale brings him back to Nineveh 3 days later and spits him up on the shore. And so Jonah's like, okay, God, I got it. And so he goes into Nineveh and he starts preaching to people. But it just so happens that there was a full solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse on this day that the whale spit him up. And so Jonah's like, dude, we got to repent to God. And then this eclipse happened. They're like, oh, we better listen to Jonah. And so the city did. It repented and went back to God. And we're like, okay, we're going to get in the straight and narrow and, you know, and honor God. And God spared them from destruction because that was the threat. Like, if you don't get your act together and get back with me. And so this eclipse is so interesting, and then it's Jonah, Nineveh, 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 and, you know, what is the invitation to our sinful nation but to repent and to come back to God? And so I started thinking about that in the times that, you know, God asked me to bring tuning forks out in the world. And I was like, hell no, I'm not going to be the tuning fork lady. I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. And I went through a whole bunch of resistance before I finally admitted that it was a good idea and agreed to do it. But I put a lot of energy into resisting it. And then God asked me to do these Sonic Sunday transmissions. I was like, I'm not giving up my Sundays to do free tune-ups for people. Like, no. but then I really, you know, then I was like, oh, you're right. It's good. Yeah, I should do it, right? And so when I was looking and understanding, like, all of the symbolism in this eclipse, because it's wide and deep and it just keeps going on and on and on. It's like, how is this even possible? I was like, oh my God, like I had my own experience of repentance where I was like, God is so great and life is so amazing. And when I get asked to do something, like I have to stop giving a hard time. Like, and I really repented. I was like, I'm not going to argue anymore. I'm going to like do what you tell me because they're always the right thing. It's always the right thing. Right. So that's going to be my talk, is like what my take is on the idea of repentance, what that really means. For us, and then just share all of these mind-blowing like synchronicities and symbols that are present for this event that's coming up.
That's beautiful. Jenny, my wife, she says, I still can't get over hearing whale songs sped up. They sound like bird songs. Bird songs slowed down sound like whale songs. But to throw a little more light on the Jonah story and the redemption aspect of it, it's basically a type of the redemption savior mythos. It's an earlier version of it. Like Jonah in Hebrew is a word that means dove, but it's also philologically the same as the word yoni, which I find interesting. So wow. In more ancient versions of the system, there's goddesses like Semiramis or Io or even Helen, like Helen of Troy, who's basically like a goddess figure in the way that she's mythologized. And these goddess figures, or the yoni power, would be crucified too. Like they're crucified savior as well. And when they would die, they would, their spirit would turn into a dove and fly away. And we know like the association of the dove with Jesus as well, when he gets baptized by Yoni the Baptist, I mean, Johannes the Baptist in the water, Jonah and the whale, that's 3 days and three nights. And it's interesting, like that's Jesus in the, you know, in the tomb, it's a similar concept. It's interesting how this is happening on around the time of the like spring equinox, Easter season, you know, like the redemption thread does seem to be there, and how these eclipses are making a cross. Yeah, or like the two eclipses are making a cross that share some of these concepts. So those are a few of my thoughts, but maybe we're meant to be turning our attention to exactly what you're talking about at this time, like more of us feeling the call. And then through inspired reflections like yourself, who have a bigger pulpit or soapbox to point our attention this way of like, What is it you're being called to do? You know, I'm definitely getting some calls right now in my life, and very excited about some of that stuff, and people will hear about it later on. But there's the my way is the right way, and that's totally allowed. And then while you're on that is where you're going to get the clues of like, but this is the bigger call from the heavens, or whatever you want to say. Like, I'm going to just leave it there for now. Yeah. I'm going to give it to Kyle.
Sorry, I was muted there. Yeah. I was just thinking, in, the Salts of Salvation book by Frank Carey and Inez, Perez, I can't remember. I'm sorry. The second author, I forget, but they talk about in the Pisces cell salt that really the true cause of all disease is sin and the lack of repentance. Like that's it. So, and you know, they set it up so nicely so that, you know, when you get to that part, it's not such a big, you know, religious trigger for the reader. And how it relates to, biochemistry as well. I think that's really interesting. So yeah, in a macrocosmic way, again, not just with the sin of, you know, Babylon and how it's presented and the debauchery, but also sin, which means off the target. So here we are living in a society that is off the target of nature, things that, you know, that were sold in the grocery store, for example, you know, and that we, you know, like people like me, I still consume. And, you know, I try always to be better with, you know, local stuff. But then again, I'm drinking lemon water and there's no lemons in Wisconsin, you know? So that might even though it's organic, you know, it still might be off the target because it's off of nature. And then having to come to terms with that and come to terms with the health of my body and find a little bit of, I don't know, reconciliation for that. All of that stuff, I think, is charged up in what's ahead with this pause, if you will, of the light. You know, that's what it is. It's a pause of the light. And it's kind of like, you know, if you're watching a movie that's streaming and all of a sudden it just pauses for a minute, you're like, oh, what's going on? Is the internet okay? or if your lights go out, you look and see if your neighbor's lights are going out or something like that. So that's what I think about all of it, is that let's take it as a pause, a moment of reflection, and reflect individually, reflect on our individual choices, reflect on and the choices that we make for, you know, how things are governed society at large. And that's what I'll be doing. I'm not going to be anywhere near the eclipse. I'm going to be out of the pathway, but I've also decided, I don't know, even if I was, I don't know if I'd want to be. I'm not really, I don't have a fear of it. I think I'm just going to take the day to fast and pause and really connect to what it might mean, you know, as a moment in time, and make it memorable for myself. That's all. Yeah. I think that the Confluence sounds great. I have a really good friend from my town. His name is BJ Fisher. Eileen, do you know BJ? He's a guitar player.
Yeah, no, I know. I think I met, was BJ at the last one? Was he there? Yeah, I met him there.
He's going to be there and super cool, super good energy. And I was thinking, he invited me. We should go. We should bend. And so anyway, I think it's going to be an awesome time. And it sounds really, really fun. The Mud Pit. Alec is a legend, and I think it's going to be a very memorable eclipse, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, well, we had a great time last year at our first one. It's a fantastic venue. It's so cool to be on the ranch there. It's great people. It's great food, you know, music, like all the things that you want. But then we've got Music and Sky coming up. And Chance, are you going to be at Music and Sky this year?
About too many things going on around here. I know. They're good reasons, but I'm keeping to myself for now. I want to actually weave a little bit more on this darkening of the light, the eclipse, the pause moment. I really like the thinking about how when the sun disappears in a time when you would normally expect it to be there, it's sort of like giving you the opportunity to take a step back and consider, hey, it's more than just me going on here. The light of this world is also responsible for my ability to even exist. So getting, taking a moment to reflect like, well, what is the higher will for me in this lifetime? I've actually got some notes on this because I was thinking about the very notion, back in January or something. But in Islamic theology, they have an idea that only God knows a man's heart or his true intentions. And it's typically understood by Westerners to mean that you can't know another person's true intentions. And so be cautious of duplicity when you're dealing with other people. That might be true, but that might also be why Muslims will follow statements of their own intent with if Allah wills it. It's like they're covering their bases or deflating the possible disappointment if their goals do not manifest. And I don't think that's a bad idea, really. So the Arabic word in the Quran that is translated to mean intention is niyya. And in the Quran, it says, there is no blame on you for what you do by mistake, but only for what you do intentionally. And Allah is all forgiving and most merciful. That's from Al-Azab, chapter 33, verse 5. So Islamic people take the idea so seriously that one's niyyah, I don't know if I'm saying that right, or their intention is the most important requirement before their ritual prayer. This is the internal prayer spoken from the heart to harmonize the audible utterance. In Arabic, the literal definition of niyyah is the pit of a date or a fruit kernel or a stone, or the source from which something emerges or grows. It's akin to the idea of a nucleus or center, or in other words, it's like the die from which something is shaped or cast. Your deepest self, it's the source from which you emanate, is your intention or your niyyah. If you have faith that your life is not created out of random chaos, that there's a divine plan or play at work, and that at the center of it is your free will to choose your thoughts, behaviors, and actions, you may also realize that throughout your life, your own intentions may not have always been clear. That certain actions have had unexpected results goes without saying. That sometimes we realize our subconscious programming is playing out through our behavior in unexpected ways is an important realization for anyone on a path of self-realization. It's logically acceptable to infer that before or beyond this particular life, the touchstone events in a life story may have been chosen by the soul who incarnates to experience those events, especially the harder or darker experiences. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So the healthy individual knows no regret because even the least enjoyable parts of their path were just as crucial to their becoming who they are as were the fun and easy parts. And so applied to the big picture, one really doesn't always know their own deepest, truest intentions, especially in the mistakes we all make. But God, or our source, our highest aspect of self, does know our intention. And I think this is the meaning of the phrase, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law, love under will. I don't necessarily think that that means what a lot of truthers would say, that it's like a satanic interpretation that do what you want with no regard for the consequences incurred for others, I think it means that the closer you get to discovering your own deepest, truest intentions through that process of messy creation, the closer you get to finding God within yourself. God knows your intentions better than you, but if you know God, you'll know your intentions and vice versa. That's totally the message that's in the never-ending story, where Bastian gets into Fantasia after, you know, he's reading the book, but then he actually falls into it. And while he's there, he's like a godlike being who whatever he wishes for comes true. But when he wishes for things that aren't really in alignment with his true will and his true self, he forgets, he loses memories of who he is and where he came from, to the point where he becomes like all powerful, but in a misaligned way, and loses almost all his memory of where he came from. So in the world that we're in, it's like all your wishes, this is the place where wishes come true. And we're here for the experience of what that's like it's slowed down in a merciful way so that you don't just have things pop up the second you think about them, but with directed intention and attention and actions. I really like that you brought up that Kaizen process of small daily practice building up. It's cumulative. I've done so many things that were big things that I did 5 minutes or 10 or 15 minutes a day, and it adds up to something huge. So, you know, some of that was like some writing I did on this idea a while back, but there is something magical about that messy creative process, exercising your will in the world while always being mindful of how am I getting closer or further away from God's will for me? Like if you're just going through the motions and watching TV and clocking into a job you don't like, this whole process doesn't even really engage. So that's why you have to start doing the messy creative, side hustle, entrepreneur, or creative practice, or whatever version of that is calling to you, so that you can figure out if that's even the one that it was calling to you in the first place. It might have actually just been a stepping stone to something else that you couldn't even imagine until you laid some of those foundations. And so the closer you get to your true will, the closer you get to knowing God's will for you, which is like for Eileen, I think that's why you're getting it on the phone. Like, do this, do a Sunday sermon, because you've been engaging this process for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I started following my own inner guidance from a very early age that, you know, I have always been able to discern it. And I think some people have so much noise in their head that they can't necessarily discern what is clear, true guidance and, you know, what should be heeded. But, you know, one of the phrases that I like to play around with is this idea that we have free won't as opposed to free will. Because that's where it tends to show up more, is when we exercise it in the won't. God's like, do this Sunday service. I'm like, I won't. I'm exercising my ability to resist that guidance, right? And I think that that's a sort of a more accurate and useful way to depict the concept of free will, is around, because everybody understands free won't.
That's perfect. Hey, I'm wondering if I could shift for a second to talking about the biofield anatomy of plants. That's our.
I want to do that. I'm just going to take a quick second. This seems like, since we're switching gears, and give some thanks. First of all, Polymathing, Canadian dollars. Appreciate your super chat, buddy. And Marty Leeds of the Gnostic Academy. Appreciate that super chat. Always coming in with a nice, generous super chat. And then Braden over on the Rockman side, which is a great way to super chat because they don't take a 30% cut. He gave a generous, generous big one. And he says, happy birthday, brother. Get yourself a cool rock. I most definitely will. So just wanted to give thanks to those super chats and make sure they're acknowledged and witnessed. But yeah, biofield of plants. So let's open that up.
I think it was really funny because when Eileen was talking about 33 miles away from wherever in Texas, is Marty Leeds popped up, and I was like, oh, that's hilarious. That's all you have to do. So I'm a little curious about, I'm just more than curious. I'm like super duper fascinated and interested ever since you've proposed talking about that. I first heard you talking about it on Alpha Vedic. I heard you talking about it with our friend Topher. Tuning plants, the story that you mentioned about tuning a maple tree in front of your house and bringing some vitality back to it. I don't know if it was a maple tree or if I'm just...
It was a maple tree.
Absolutely. I have a maple tree in front of my house that needs tuning too. It's got some blotches and stuff. So yeah. And so I'm a tuning plant guy and I'm also very tuned into plants. Like I hear plants. I get messages from plants beyond the auditory sense. Just like, you know, when you're tuning, you're actually picking up an audible sound, but there's like a lot of packet of information with that that comes.
Kyle is a plant messenger. Literally, he has jingles. He sings jingles that are from a certain plant so you can understand what it is that they're here for. Like commercials. They're so fun.
They are really fun. Yeah, my 1 or 2 year old son, every night I have to rock him to sleep if his mom can't get him to sleep. So we've been singing this song for almost a year now that I came up with it because it's an Aries plant. And it's about stinging nettle. And now he sings along with me. So if you don't mind, I'll sing it. It goes, there's a play on words with, because he's a half Italian boy. So one of his mother's tongue is Italian. So when he gets hurt, he goes, ay, ay, ay. So it starts out like this. I know a plant that makes my body feel green like a chicken in spring. I identified on a moonless night. It was quite a friendly sting in a soup, in a pesto, in a tea kettle, stinging nettle. And we just do that over and over and over again all night long for the last year. It's really fun. And so I feel like, you know, when I'm in the field, I get these songs. They're catchy songs. And maybe I'm some sort of like Midwestern punk rock curandero or something. But
you've got your fairy touch. This is the guy that will be walking through the woods and all of a sudden realize I need to put on my clothes backwards for the fairies.
Yeah, that's definitely a remedy for if the fairies are messing with you. If you can't find your keys or if your glasses are somewhere, just try putting your clothes on backwards and say a few things backwards. It makes them laugh, and then they usually, you know, leave them in your refrigerator or wherever. That's the remedy. But where I was going with this is I really, really appreciate learning about plants through all the different ways. And I feel like they are the teachers to me. And so when you were talking about tuning the plants, I was like, oh, duh. Like how could I have not have thought of that? Like that seems very, very obvious to me. And maybe it's because I feel like I'm tuned in some way. So I'm interested if you've explored the biofield anatomy as it pertains to like the anthroposophical model, maybe outlined by like mystics like Goethe and who I call Jeff and Rudolf Steiner. And this model presents plants that have like a clear polarity to human form, right? So like where there's the roots, they take hold of what they're perceiving in the environment from the earth realm. And they are quite selective about the minerals that they bring up. And so the roots have a relationship to the thinking qualities that we have being outside in our environment. So roots have a relationship to our animal mind, our animal bodies as well, being of the world. The leaves have a representation to rhythm, to breath. They're related to the water element. And just like our own carbonness as it deconstructs in our body and it leaves ourself through inversely proportionated tree out into the world, and then it is absorbed by that inversely proportionated tree out there by the carbon and gives us oxygen, and there's this great exchange. And so the leaves have that relationship with the rhythm, the chest, the movement of the heart, the rhythm of our spine. And then moving up, we have the fruit and the flower first, which is the air element, and has a lot more to do with like the metabolism and reproductive system and the fruit as well, and the fire element baked by the sun and so on. And so I'm just wondering, in your experience with tuning, if you've noticed anything about some of these models, how they might represent that fractality with a human being, if you found what you found, I guess, in your exploration of the tuning of the plants and how it expresses, how it's perceived in the fork. Is it different for you? And I have some experience too. I would love to share my notes too, but go ahead.
I can't say that the times when I've tuned things other than humans, pets, plants, that I've had any kind of curiosity about the biofield anatomy, honestly, about what their biofield anatomy might be. I always come in with plants and nature and animals, just curious about what the signal is telling me, you know, which is kind of in a general way. I'll just approach it and I'll be curious more about what's coming through with the signal in that particular plane of approach. But it's honestly never occurred to me to explore the biofield of a houseplant and discover if different areas are holding different information. Or
can I chime in one thing? You know, with humans, there's a clear front and back. Plants, not so much. You know, so like, I wonder if it's really not, if it's an apples to oranges thing.
Yeah. Well, it's true, right? Because the humans, you've got a front, a back, a left, a right. You know, you got the sides of the head. Whereas a plant, it is a very different thing. It's like, what is all of that? But even with animals, you could potentially, but I guess I've never felt like it was necessary to explore and understand that in order to create a successful adjustment with whoever I'm working on. Right. So, you know, I tend to do things by necessity. Like if it's necessary for me to do something in a particular way, I'll figure out how to do it. But if it's not necessary, I just won't, right? I'm a big shortcut taker. It's why I've gotten so much done in my life. I'm like, oh, I can eliminate that step, eliminate that step, eliminate that step. So, but then it's not my primary wheelhouse. Like for someone like you, Kyle, where plants are your primary wheelhouse, right? I can see where you would be drawn deeper into different facets of exploration with that. So I'm curious what you discovered.
One thing I catch with people a lot is just at the opening or using, you know, I think a lot of biofield tuners will do pendulums. I'm more of like a dowsing rods guy myself, but just in that opening scan, a lot of times I will get the full sense of what the theme of this tuning is going to be and the, you know, and then we're just looking for that theme in the other areas of the specifics of the biofield, psychologizing it. Plants probably aren't psychologizing the, you know, their reality to that degree. But I wonder with like the Earth star and the Sun star and the central axis, if that might be one area where there's overlap between plants and humans, that they tend to have at least that like column experience going on. And maybe something has gone on to knock that out of whack. Again, back to the like a theme of a whole tuning. I think the party trick of just checking out their Earth star and Sun star and then telling them, okay, this is how you operate. This is your guiding principles. This is the way that you act. Like you get so much just out of looking at that alignment. If something is off or shorter, too close, or all of the above. So maybe that's one axis of analysis that could be brought in with plants. It's my two cents.
Yeah. Wow. Makes sense.
I was in the forest today. I was in this old growth forest that's not far from my house that I love to go to. And it's like old growth. There's like really beautiful species that are kind of rare in there of flowers and plants. And there's a cemetery in the middle. And it's just like lots of energy. There's a lot of energy in this place. And so I was like, I'm going to go around and there's this plant or a tree. It's a cottonwood tree that everyone that knows this forest identifies as grandfather tree. Like this sucker is like 7 feet in diameter. And it is just massive, massive, massive tree. And it's in the middle. So it's kind of like that, avatar tree. You know, it's like you really feel like it's got a connection and it's got its pulse on its roots on the pulse of everything. And so I was like, I want to go hang out with that tree and see what that's like. My son and I were tuning around other trees. And that was another thing too. I was like, I'm going to hand him the fork. He's really good at just playing around. And he's pretty close to nature and source right now. So maybe I'll learn a thing or two about how he's like approaching them, and I'll take that into account. But anyway, when we're hanging out by this grandfather tree, I was like, where do I start? Where's the barrier? So I started like 25 feet away, and I just moved my fork about 6 inches, and I was like, and it was like, there it is. I was like, come on, really? Did I really just pick the right place, or is it just appearing that way because that's what it wanted to show me? And so that's the kind of information that I was feeling throughout this session, I guess I would call it. And I really spent a lot of time there. I could feel distinct patterns of the same type of feeling that I get when there's a loss from a parent or from a loved one in somebody's biofield in that distance of 25 feet, like as if another tree fell down. I really felt that. And I also felt, this was really interesting too. I'm using the 140, and I switched out to the 528. And when I pulled out the 528, I could not hear it at all. It just like ting, ting. It was like, I was like, what's going on here? Is it sucking up this energy? It's just not allowing it at all. It was almost like the forest did not like it, or there wasn't a resistance to it. It was just like, it just pulled it up. It was like a vacuum. So I found that really interesting. So I'm playing with house plants because I have access to the roots. Like I can like tune the root, you know, in the pot, and then I can go up to the top and the trunk and everything like that. So I am trying to feel like like I was describing that, like, theosophical model of the thinking quality of the plant. And according to, you know, like the models of Steiner and things like that, when a plant is, when it's in the summertime, when it's blooming, that is like the soul leaving its thinking quality. So it's like out there. And when our soul is leaving our thinking quality, we call that sleep. We call that dreaming. And then the soul comes back, and the spirit's always there, but the soul comes back, that animated lights on aspect comes when we wake up. And so it is pretty interesting to think that, you know, we might get a different reading in the summertime, which is when all the trees are technically dreaming in this, you know, way of thinking about it. And as from the wintertime, which is when they're like really communicating on a more animalistic nature of through the roots and everything like that. So I don't know. I'm just breaking the ice on it. I really feel it's extremely exciting. It's really fun, especially because I enjoy, harvesting plants. I harvest plants for medicine, and there'll be times clearly when I'm around a plant and I get, the same way that God might speak to me. I call it the Holy Ghost, where the plant is like, take me for this person. And I'm like, oh, wow. Or it'll be like, no way, no way, leave me alone. And I don't know why. Maybe there's pesticides. Maybe there's something. Maybe there's and sometimes it's just like, hey, just go up the hill. There's, you know, there's our buddy up there, and there's a huge patch. And so that's another thing too, is this being in tune with those, that transmission, the Holy Ghost, I guess you could say, and regretting it when I'm not listening, you know, when I'm resisting, when I have the free won't. There's times when it really does come back to bite me. And so that's something that I feel, you know, I can access without a tuning fork, but I'm really interested in the potential of bringing my tuning forks along for the foray, just to see what else is ringing in there. And I haven't had this harebrained idea in the growing season yet. So here we go. That's something I'm going for.
Right. So much to explore. I mean, that is, it's like going out in the winter, like how does it sound and feel, and what's going on here in the winter, the spring, the summer, the fall. I mean, there's so much to discover. there's just so much to discover and to listen to and to interact with. And I really find that the tuning forks help make anybody into a plant whisperer or a pet whisperer. I mean, the moment that I tune into a plant or I tune into a pet, I immediately have a conversation going. Like there is understandable communication flow that is happening. And I think anybody can do that. I really do. I think it's just a matter of quieting your mind because this is happening. When we know that plants communicate, right? Somebody sent me something recently and they said that plants actually emit pretty high decibels, but somehow in a range that we don't hear. And I had an experience with my own house plants, just hearing them, not tuning them, but I had a bunch of aloe plants that had kind of multiplied and spider plants that had multiplied, and they were all over my kitchen counter. And so I decided to separate them because my aloe plants were turning into spider plants. They were getting long and skinny instead of plump. And so I decided that they are having too much influence from the spider plants. So I took all the spider plants out and I put them in a different room, except for one, which I left on a different table in there. But I was getting ready to leave on a 3-week trip. And I walked past that spider plant and it was screaming at me that it wanted to go in the room with the other spider plants. And I had left the only spider plant in there with all those aloes. And it knew that I was leaving. And boy, did it work to get my attention and to communicate clearly to me to please move it into the other room. I mean, I was walking past it. I'm like, whoa, okay. right? As they definitely do, they're tuned into us and they are communicating. And so the tuning forks just kind of create a translator almost that lets you hear and understand them.
The plants emitting sound when stressed is proven by the science trademark as well.
Yeah.
It's just like humans that when we're undergoing hard time or we're holding a lot of dissonance or a lot of fear or we're just damaged, we leak sound or we leak light. It's both actually. I mean, yeah. Sound and light are the same thing on a different part of the spectrum, but that's that's something very, very similar between the two types of organism. But Kyle, I wanted to know, are you cool with me playing the Instagram video you made today in the forest with Davide?
It's yes, just a minute. Yeah, long. That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
I think everybody would like this. Okay, just a minute.
All right, Kyle and Davide reporting from the woods. We are tuning the trees. We are learning the biofield of the forest. Here, let's listen to this tree. Let's listen to this beech tree right here. What does it sound like? No, this one over here. Da-da. What does that beech tree sound like? Tonight on Vibrant on the Interverse channel on YouTube.
Yeah, I just wanted to get Davide tuning because, you got him learning young. He's going to be a master. And boy, is that kid big for a 2-year-old.
Yeah, he's really big. It's really funny. It's really fun how, he's just like, it's going to be natural for him to go up to, not only does he go up to every tree and hug it, he goes up to every tree, takes his hat off. As like a sign of reverence. I didn't teach him that. He hugs it and he's like, wait, my hat's on. And he takes it off like he's in church and he hugs it for like 5 seconds and then he kisses it. I taught him how to hug it because he was on the trail one day and I just wanted him to like pick up the pace. Come on. Hey, come over here and hug this tree. And so he like hurried up to hug the tree. And now it was just like he hugs every single tree. And not only that, if there's a root sticking out of the ground, he bends down and kisses the root. Oh, it's so sweet. So, yeah, I think he's going to be really tuned into the aspects of nature, too. I was just thinking, too, Chance, just to double back on what you were saying, too. There's a book called The Secret Life of Plants and researcher Cleve Baxter in the 70s. And I think he's the one that basically came up with, one of those guys that does lie detector tests, like for Maury Povich show or whatever, but he's doing it for the law enforcement. And the plant in the room is like, they hooked it up to the plant in the room and started making signals. And he started, it basically started this whole movement that like the plants have this, they're emitting the same stuff that we are, electromagnetism, right? And so not only or the plants able to, you know, have a higher frequency when they're stressed, but they're able to identify, they set up like experiments with like plant murderers where they would have like, you know, a group of people draw straws and then, you know, nobody knew who it was. And then one person that had the shorter straw would go into a room and like hack up a piece of tree that was right next to another one, another houseplant. And then one by one, they would bring the people in. And when the person that was the murderer of the tree came in, the plant was like, on the EKG or whatever the lie detector test. I can't remember what it's called. So it is, I think that's really interesting. But also he was like, well, what about, I wonder if how they react at a distance. So he went on a conference or something like that. And he taught far away where he had to take a plane ride, and he had his plant hooked up back at the lab. And when he got back home, he saw, oh, there was a whole bunch of activity right here. What was going on at that? He checked his watch. That was when I was talking about the plant at the conference. He was like showing a slideshow about the plant, and the plant was like, it was like wagging its tail. Like the dog knows when its owner's coming home or whatever. Right. And so he's like, well, this is going to be really fun. So he took a notebook, and he went to Times Square on New Year's Eve, and he's just like, I want to have the whole hustle and bustle and see if we could discern all of the activity of this plant. And so he almost got into a fight. He tried to like, he almost lost on the subway. There's just like a lot of action, you know? And that was all comported to what he would read in somebody as a, you know, EKG or gosh, what's the word? The lie detector specialist as that he would read. It was all there. So the plant was reading this from a distance, and that was his house plant. And so just, I mean, our house plants, they want our attention, as Eileen was mentioning, and they react to how we feel even when we're not even locally in their proximity. And so that's just another, if anybody wants to, you know, wonder about how does distance tuning work? What is going on with this realm? It's just available at any time for anyone and anything, it seems, including the houseplant that, you know, that I was, looking at right now, that is just like, wow, it's so intelligent, it's so beautiful. And I'm getting a vibe from this plant that I'm looking at right now. So I think it's just a really fun book, and it goes into a lot of different advancements of science in this matter. I think it was written in like the late 70s or 80s, so there's even more to it now. But it's very fun study, and I think that bringing it all back to where we started here is that can be accessed by just having a vocabulary from the tuning forks, which is what Eileen teaches in their school and also in the book. And I think it's just awesome. There's just you don't have to have a fancy machine in a fancy laboratory. You just have a tuning fork that rings true. And that's it.
It's so true. Actually, I hooked up with a researcher who was continuing that research, and I worked on a couple plants hooked up to a polygraph machine. And that's where I discovered that the language of vibration, that plants feel fear in the same vibrational signature as humans. So is, you know, plants can be afraid, and the signal is the exact same as humans. And I knew that animals were, but it didn't even occur to me that plants spoke the same language, but they do. And so, of course, they sense what's going on with us because they understand our vibes.
My wife, she always would describe like fear as a wobble, and she's not even a tuner, you know, but like that's just the self-evident truth that fear has like this wobble quality to it. We trip when we're in fear, metaphorically or sometimes literally, because it throws us off balance with all of this like extra vibration.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, it also like depletes your gas mileage, right? Because it's a double beat. So you're spending twice as much energy in any given moment when you're running fear or anxiety in your system. So, and it's not, you know, but it's also, and it can be really hidden. Actually, Chase, you've encountered fear, right, as a tuner. Kyle, have you encountered fear and know that feeling, right? It's very distinctive, and you can really perceive it through the forks. But it was actually one of the last emotions that I figured out. Because like fear, sadness was the first one that I identified. I was like, there's sadness in that fork, and anger and frustration and worry and all of these things. But I had been listening in and understanding the language of vibration for at least a couple of years before the frequency of fear finally sunk into my consciousness. And I was working on a woman who was very generously proportioned, and everywhere I held the fork, it had this thing in it. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that that was fear. But I think it's very hard for us to perceive and understand emotions that we don't feel in ourselves. And I grew up as the youngest of six, like in a pack, basically, in a kind of environment where if you show fear, you get attacked. And so I learned how to bury fear in myself to the point where I didn't feel it. Like I started traveling by myself when I was 16. I traveled around the world. Like I was never afraid of anybody, anything, anywhere. I never felt fear. I just never, ever felt fear. And because I didn't have an intimate understanding or recognition of it, it was pretty much the last major emotion that I identified in the biofield. But many students pick it up right away, because it can be so obvious. But it was going on all those years, but I just didn't perceive or understand it because I didn't recognize it in myself.
I'm kind of like you in that way, but I also had the neural pathway, you know, mind tunnel that you'd already dug out. So and inform me of what to listen for fear. And Jenny wants to know, is there a sound one could make with the mouth or vocal cords to help transmute in a moment of fear?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think that might be different for everybody, right? That's the sort of thing might depend on your age, your sex, your location. It might be different in different moments for different people. But I would say that the answer is inside of you. So the next time you're in a situation where you want to transmute fear, just, you know what, sometimes it's as simple as just asking the question in that moment, right? To just have the, because a lot of times people get into things and they're like, I don't know what this is. And if you just stop and get quiet and go, what is this? It'll drop in. It'll just come to you. So in that moment, ask that question, what sound can I make or what could I do here to transmute or alchemize this, and see what drops in. You know, just trust that.
Your body already wants to make a sound when you're in a moment of discomfort or like pain, and fear is a kind of a type of psychic pain. So there's that. Just see what wants to naturally come out and play with that. And I don't know how you could have a bad time if you spend enough moments consecutively making sounds. Like it's fun. Or one thing that just always gets me in the zone is I hit my big giant fork, but you can do this with regular forks too. Hold it up in the air like Thor, and then I just and I just let my voice match the frequency of the fork, and there's like the best feeling ever. It immediately just pulls me into the present moment and the flow and the zone and all that. You can do that with any fork or just with your voice. So you don't even have to necessarily have a fork for that. I had a question though, another question. This is one, you know, this is a personal question. Do you have any, or have you ever found that, or have other people reported to you that it's trickier for them to tune family members, the people who, or friends who they might have, like, you might hold a biased opinion about them already, or the resistance that might come from someone that close to your personal orbit where like the potential for the story corrections that might come up in the tuning to be things they've already heard from you, or, you know, how does that work? Or is that something your family has kind of gotten past because they're so close to you and the work you've been doing for so long?
Well, I think a lot of tuners find that it's challenging to tune their own offspring and mate, but not as challenging to tune their parents and their siblings. Right. My older son is literally the only person that I ever encountered that I could not successfully adjust. I would say I've never been a shocker. I couldn't balance until I like encountered my son's right knee and I could not get it to move. No, because I'm an extremely stubborn and willful person, and so is my husband, and it kind of got compounded in my son.
And it's kind of like a law of the universe that mom can't overcome every challenge for baby. Baby true. Has to do it.
Yeah, I couldn't get anywhere. And, you know, whereas I can meet a stranger, can walk in the office, and I'm and that's easy. But, you know, and also I'll never forget when I was working on my son, Quinn, when I discovered in the biofield anatomy, the mother and father spots, and I went into my son and I listened to the mother spot and I was like, oh, like, that doesn't sound very good. And that was before I started getting tuned. You know, I was in college full time. I mean, it was a stressful time. I probably shouldn't be listening to this. And because we're so entwined in the energy of our children, we're not objective. We're, you know, I pretty much figured out that I could do first aid on my kids. I could do first aid and they were receptive to that and we could get somewhere. But as far as like getting into the other things you can get in with tuning, it just doesn't work very well. I mean, maybe there's people who have found exceptions to that. But I just would rather somebody else work on them. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like surgeons doing surgery on their children. You know, I think that you might not want to be a surgeon doing something like that or on your partner, right? It's just somebody else's job.
I wonder if there's like a certain age where that occurs or that difficulty crops up, like, you know, bouncing it over to Kyle, you've got a little one. Is it something that you find there's not a lot of psychologizing for a 2-year-old, right? So maybe it's just more on the first day, got a boo-boo, this is going to make you feel better. But have you tried much tuning on Davide or on your wife?
When it comes to my wife, I feel like that was one of the first things. The first people I've ever tuned was my wife. And I was like, man, I suck at this. I cannot get. And like, that's the other thing too, is that like, just as the nature of a relationship and, you know, just the mantle of taking myself seriously as a man sometimes, and I want to fix things. And I really felt like maybe I had, you know, early on in my tuning practice, like I had really wanted to put that into there. You know what I mean? And so actually it was a really good lesson for me in hindsight, because I started to realize that this stuff doesn't work. If you try anything, you can't do it. You can't do it. If you're trying, you have to be neutral. You have to receive, you just have to report what's going on.
The ladies don't want us to fix the thing all the time. Sometimes they just want us to listen to the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that was after the first time I did it, I was just like, I don't know if I'm going to just, and it set me off 6 months behind, you know. I didn't pick it up again for 6 months. And then
I'm glad we're bringing this up then, so other people might not get deterred from the path by similar experience.
Yep. And I did it again. The second time I did it, I was like, I really want to do this. This is something I feel like I could really excel at. So I'm going to do it. You lay down in your bed. The baby's asleep. Everybody's comfortable. I'll be down in the basement and I'm going to do my first remote tuning. And then we'll just talk on FaceTime on the iPhone. And I actually just muted it. And, you know, I actually felt like that was a huge breakthrough for me, because I was initiated into the mystery of biofield tuning without having to suffer my when I get self-conscious of the feedback that's locally in the room as a new practitioner. I'm like, oh, what? They're like scratching their ear. Does that mean I'm doing it wrong? things like that. So
this is why I love remote tuning. Even when somebody's in the same town as me, I'm like, let's just do it remotely. There's a lot of advantages to it.
And tuning my son is such a joy. I feel like it is extremely healing to tune my family. Like, it's really, 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 really healing to me. I become so aware of my own shadow And even with my mom too, when it, like another thing that started me off on my journey, and I was like, okay, I'm doing this. So I'm not sure if I should do this. I don't know if I'm good. So I'm doing a distance session with my mom, and I'm in the right side off of the paternal line right there, as Eileen has described. And so this is, so I'm got the fork right there, solar plexus. I'm like, oh, I'm thinking to myself, this is probably where my grandpa is if he's here. And as soon as I brought the fork in there, I could hear three knocks on the ceiling above me. I'm in the basement, and that was my son knocking three times on the floor. And my son's name is Davide. He's named after my mom's dad, David. And as soon as I put my fork in there, it was like tomp, tomp, tomp. And I was like kind of waiting for some sort of like thing to happen, a cue, a ghost, you know, but it was actually a living child, you know? And I was like blown away by that. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm totally in. That was another initiation into another mystery of it. And also just being there with, you know, these particular ancestral rivers, and just really hanging out in those fields of my mom. She's listening, by the way. She's a big fan of yours, Eileen. So hi, mom. And and just getting a lot of feedback about my own ancestry and my own lineage and the things that I need to do here to break without passing karma on further. And that was all available for me. And so I really feel that reflected back to me when I'm tuning my son, who I feel like is very, you know, not yet, you know, corrupted by the world yet. It's just a little guy, and let me put it this way, his astral body isn't completely set in. So as Steiner would say. So yeah, it's a really fun, but I'm much more fonder of tuning people who I don't have a relationship with.
Yeah, I don't think I've asked you. Oh, go ahead, Eileen.
Well, you know, I was just saying again, like when I tuned my husband, it was a first aid kind of thing that I was able to help him with that. You know, so that is easy for the most part, just coming in with like, oh, your knee hurts. Well, let's sort that out. Versus, you know, going poking around in the relationship zone or any of those kind of more intimate interpersonal things, because having it's impossible to be objective, I think. And I think so much of being a successful tuner is really staying in that neutral witness kind of place. So yeah.
Chance. Well, one more question for you while we got you, man. I maybe have two, but you know, you can be brief. What about putting yourself on the table? Is that something you've, I'm sure it's probably something you've experimented with, like working with yourself as the remote tuning client, more or less?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting because that honestly never occurred to me for so many years. Cause my trauma response was to be very other oriented, and people started asking me, you know, do you do this on yourself? I'm like, I don't know, it's boring. I don't do it on myself, whatever.
Like, sounds like me.
Wasn't really interested in doing it on myself. The very first time that I ever worked on myself, I had an incredibly profound experience. So I was in a Faraday cage, the California Institute for Human Science. And I was doing an experiment with a biophoton counter and a thermometer and a group distance session. So I had 333 people sign up to volunteer to be part of this group distance session. And so I had to go into the Faraday cage for an hour by myself as a control. And then I had to go in for an hour tuning the whole group. Okay. And so I'm in there by myself in the dark in this Faraday cage. And I'm like, well, I might as well tune myself as the control. And I think this is the first time I ever actually tuned myself, because one of the things I would say is that in tuning, there's a triangulation and a witnessing that happens when, you know, I'm witnessing what you're doing, the fork is there, and that witness piece is really important. So if you're tuning yourself, you don't have that witness, right? That's what I said to a bunch of people. Anyway, I go to this Faraday cage and I'm tuning the heart. This is what the tuning is on, and it's on self-love. And I find something in my own field on the right side from like age 3, pretty big trespass that happened to me at that age. And I'd uncovered it in other parts of the field with other people working on me. But I never considered it in the biofield anatomy, saying yes when you mean no, kind of zone. And it was so powerful and it was so moving for me to be in my with my 3-year-old in this traumatic situation on the right side of my heart. And in that moment, I realized that I was being witnessed by God. And I was like, oh, like we always have a witness. All right. It was so stunning. I mean, it was just such a stunning revelation to be in that pain and realize that I had a witness, that I had an absolute compassionate, present witness to that. And what was interesting about that particular experiment was that I had observed when I was doing group distance sessions that the temperature would go up in the room. And so I had this little, you know, thermometer that you could plug USB that you could put in a computer, and it went up half a degree when I was in there by myself, and it went up 3 degrees when I had 330 people in that Faraday cage with me energetically, it's which like was really
three,
pretty
three,
wild.
Three triangulation, 3 points. I don't know.
Yeah. Marty. I don't know. But anyway, that was the very first time that I worked on myself. And I realized that, wow, you can work on yourself at a distance. But Chase, what I generally do is like, if I feel like I need to work on myself for whatever reason, I will record it and I will turn it into a group distance session so that it's not just me standing there or spending an hour tuning myself, but it's me recording me tuning the field that I am part of. And so I just put myself in a group. But then other times I have done, there was one time where I got into the ancestral river on my mom's side and into like a whole bunch of poverty consciousness stuff. That was really deep, you know, from Irish, the potato famine, whatever, just very Trump war kind of stuff. And I wasn't even tired, but that tuning was so powerful and went so deep in my ancestry that it knocked me out for 3 hours. Like I basically finished the tuning, fell over, passed out for 3 hours, woke up full drool. You know? I was like, what just happened? I just knocked myself out with that tuning. So yeah, I mean, I didn't believe it was possible for a long time, then discovered it was, and discovered we are witnessed. But for the most part, I still do kind of find it boring to go poking around in my own field by myself.
You know, there's at least some element of self-tuning to tune others. You know, yeah. It's like you can't really recognize something out of whack. Unless you would know that it's out of whack if it was in yourself or you've gone through that shift. Like, I think that's part of what makes an effective tuner overall is that not only do they see where the imbalance is, but they've gone through that lesson or are currently working through that lesson themselves so that they know what, in terms of the psychology of it, like, here's your belief that's holding this energy back. Here's what you would do to liberate that. Like, you kind of have to know it through lived experience for the epiphany to even be available to you. So there's a constant reminder, a constant flow of reminders of what the optimal mindset, thinking pattern, mental post-it notes to notify you of when you're getting off balance in your thinking, you know, all of that, that is necessary to even be effective at this, in my opinion. Not saying that I'm like enlightened and fully healed or perfect or don't have my own issues, but at least I can at least give the right answer on the test, whether or not I do that always in my life. That's between me and my life, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, no, totally. There has to be some good self-awareness in order to help others to be self-aware of themselves or to understand what it is you're encountering. And you have to care, right? I think that's the biggest ingredient. Is that you have to really care, right? Kyle, you care about your clients, your customers, your plants, you care. Chance, you care, right? I mean, I care. And that is why I do it, because I care and I'm interested and I want to help.
So that's my biggest anxiety when I was getting into this is like, I just really hope that I did a good job. Please let me actually help. Please make this actually effective. Now I don't really have an anxiety about that. I still have an absolute, pure, constantly held intention to want to help. But that's absolutely the case. Like, it was painfully so at first whenever I was gaining confidence in the process.
Yeah, when I was very lucky because when I first started off, I didn't have any expectations at all. I was like, what's happening? And I was so unattached to the outcome because it was pure research and science. So whenever people did report that they read her, I was like, wow, bonus. I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't have to suffer any of that performance anxiety because there was no right way.
I gave myself a tuning the other day and I learned, I really enjoy giving myself tuning because I get to come down to the basement and just be by myself for a little while and really be beside myself and tune it, listen into the stories that I haven't heard about myself. And the one that I found was when I was just 1.5 years old, discovering that I was going to be a brother, like what that meant to me as a human being to have to share mommy's attention, you know?
Oh yeah. I had to iron that one out in a self-tuning.
And I never ever, you know, thought about that, but it was right there, clearly there. And I was trying to find, cause I had like this very strange, injury come up with my left foot. And I can't explain it. Really can't explain it. I don't have any way to, like, oh, I jumped off something or I kicked something. No, I just, all of a sudden it just started really hurting. So I was like, this is going to be awesome. I'm totally going to find out what it is. And it was there. That's where it was. It was like way, way, way out there. And so I just followed that in and I found some other stuff that I had to think about and really, I don't know, find some peace with and take away, you know, bring that sin back, I suppose you could say, and claim it, you know, it's my story after all. And I didn't realize it was there for me to claim. And so that was really fun. It's really beautiful. And it also gives me a lot of perspective just as like a, you know, I'm not like begging for clients or whatever, but I really do like to have, to be able to have a little bit more experience. So I'm like, all right, well, who's going to join me at 11 p.m. tonight? Oh, me. I'll be there. And so I think it's really fun. At this point, at least, I'm having fun with it.
Nice.
I, in terms of the, like, becoming a brother, what I had to like iron out in terms of that, and it's going to be different for different people, but I was an easygoing, very low impact child. My sister came into the world when I'm about 3.5. And she's like demanding. She knows she is. I'm not talking smack, but mom's attention or else, like, at all times. That was when I moved off into becoming more independent and self-entertaining, which I'm plenty good at that. And I like that. But what I learned was that a big chunk of my life, I realized why I had stayed in not good relationships that weren't good for me, even way past the expiration date, because that little kid version of self was living for feminine approval, regardless of if it was actually a good female to have the approval from. And so in relationships where that dynamic was withheld or like almost weaponized in a manipulative way, I was super susceptible to that. And even was inviting those type of situations because it was like a recurrent of a pattern that, even though it wasn't good for me, I was comfortable because it was what's normal. And that's the kind of thing that can really level you up in life, is to figure out those motivating principles and then align them to what's actually healthy for yourself. But we're getting close to the end, Eileen. I would love to hear if you've got closing thoughts or you want to share like a recent fun tuning success story you're aware of, or, you know, whatever comes to mind. It's been a blast hanging out again. This is great.
Yeah, I know. It's always fun hanging out with you chance in video or in person. And great to meet you, Kyle. I hope that we get to hang out somewhere somehow. And I definitely want to hear some updates about what you're learning and tuning your plants. And I love your little guy. I love kids with tuning forks. It's just the best. They're so, like you said, the way that they can get great sound out of them and just the purity and innocence and curiosity and the way they take to them is so great. Well, let's see. I've got a few in-person events coming up that I'd love to invite people to. I'm going to obviously be at Confluence in just a couple weeks in Bandera, Texas at Sovereignty Ranch. I'm going to be at Music and Sky in California, and that's on the summer solstice. I'm going to be at Victor Wooten's Spirit of Music Camp in Nashville in August. So anybody that loves Victor Wooten and the bass, that's an incredible camp. I had such a magical time there last year at Wooten Woods Campground. I'm doing Sing the Body Electric. So people who are interested in toning and making some sound with their voices, I'm going to be at Kripalu in Lenox, Mass, July 5th through 7th. And that is a rockin' good time. I'm also going to be at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York in May, teaching a basic class on tuning forks and voice for health. So kind of a good introductory, let's hang out and play with forks and voice and see what we can do with them just as a self-care kind of practice. And those are all on my website. So you can find that at biofieldtuning.com. I love in-person events. I love hugs. I love hanging out, you know, off script and with all the great people that are there. So I would love to see some people at any of these fun events that I'll be at.
Yeah, Eileen's a lot of fun in real life. I highly recommend it. Get out to any of those that you can.
Thanks, Chance.
Awesome. So, you know, Kyle, you got thoughts. Go ahead, buddy. I'm sure you might want to say something to our guru of tuning here.
Yeah, actually, I just got a really brief plant walk story for you, if you don't mind. So in learning about plants and the way that they come to us, there's the signatures where we can find things through the sight, through the, the way that they look, the color of the flower, for example, describes the vibration, or the shape describes where it might work in the body. And then the smell, the flavor of, there's a variety of flavors and how they impact the body. The bitterness, as I was talking about earlier, helps with digestion. We got those senses. Then we also have the way that it feels, the texture of it. And then the fifth sense is something that you don't really find so much in plants. It's the sense of sound. So how a plant sounds, like the auditory aspect of a plant, is kind of rare. And when we find that in a plant, it's usually an indication. It's the sense that is bringing us to this liminal space that we're walking in doing this type of work that we're doing, where we are simultaneously on a objective layer, but also finding ourselves in dream time. And so the story is, I'm taking myself and ancient Greek poet along, and maybe a Native American from the Mi'kmaq tribe. And we're going on a little herb walk. We're going down the hill and we get to the willow tree that's by the water. And I talk about how the element of the water is there. The willow is sacred to the water. There's the sun coming up. There's the way that the willow leaf is shaped is that it terminates right in the middle. So it's equal on the stem. And when it blows in the wind, they have a percussive sound, but they're really gentle. And so with the wind and the sun reflecting on the water and the greenness, there would be no doubt to this ancient Greek that the muses live in this tree. Like, that is the thing. Like, there's be no way that I could convince him otherwise, him or her. And that's what they say, that the sound of the muses lives in the willow trees. And so we leave the ancient Greek poet behind. He's got his scroll. He's hanging out in the branches. And the shaman Native American shaman. We go up the hill to a tree called the honey locust tree, and I describe, you know, the honey locust, and it was named by the settlers that came here, the locust, and what the locust means. And it also has a relationship with the word lobster, and that's because the fruit looks like a carob. It looks like a carob, and the word carob is where we get the word carrot, which is like weights and measures and all this stuff. And let's just imagine that we've been there for a whole season, and then all of a sudden the leaves blow off, and the only thing that remains is the sound of the tree blowing in the wind. And when it does, it has this rattling nature to it. And so here we have this like serpentine coiled Fibonacci perfect, you know, representations of the cyclical nature of the world, and they become rattles. And to me, it's like the sound of nature that's giving us that, you know, that's in the trees, that's in the willows, that's in the honey locust, that I use these in sessions, by the way. That's all there to remind us also that everything is available for us to tune into, and that everything has the capacity to tune. Even just looking today at the robin, the robins do this fun thing where they do 1, 2, 3 steps, and then they put their ear down like that to the ground. 1, 2, 3, ear down. And by the way, when I do this at home in front of my 2-year-old, he goes crazy, thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. So, and so they're just tuning, listening for the worms. They have their feet on the ground. They're feeling for the worms. They got their sight. They have all their senses available. And one of the things that I just wanted to say with that, you know, in closing is that how much I appreciate the sensory aspect of biofield tuning. We're not just listening. There's so much more available, and it's all there encoded in nature as well. And it's very fun to learn. And I just have so much gratitude for the what you've paved, Eileen, and for what you've brought Chance, and also for being here tonight. It's just awesome. So thank you so much.
Nice. Thanks, Kyle. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, that was lovely, man. And Eileen, I know you've been at it a long day with podcasts, so I'll let you go if you want to hop off. I'm going to hang back for a little bit with the people, but it's been a real blessed birthday stream. I really appreciate it. It's super fun to hang. Look forward to the next time it's in person.
That sounds great. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Much love.
Thanks, Chance. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, ain't she great?
The best.
She's the best. You can just hear it in her voice, the coherence. And that's really what our role with nature is that coherence, like here, like that co-witness, hearing the same thing, you know, that's what reality is. That's what consciousness is. Getting through these filtration systems that we've built up to protect ourselves from what it is that we imagined that we're afraid of, when it's all like, all actually was the will of God to begin with. And our free want is what put up those filters. I think that's kind of the theme of this chat. So everybody out there, wanted to let you know, if you want to do a tuning with me or with Kyle, I'll let him tell you how you would get a hold of him for that. But my website, interversepodcast.com/sound-healing, is where you'll find the description of what my process is like, how you might get signed up for a session, or you can just straight email me, chance@interversepodcast.com. That's going to be linked in the show notes. Eileen's biofield tuning website is also going to have a list of practitioners. If you want to try somebody else that's out there, she's trained thousands, and I'm just happy if more people are getting tuned or practicing tuning. She offers training courses through her website. You can be part of that movement, which is also really great if you feel like you just want the whole full meal deal of best practices. But like Kyle and I are living examples that there's a reality to this process, because you can figure it out for yourself. We've both done that. We're both in the process of furthering that journey and developing it. And I kind of like that, because it just feels so real. Every time I make a new discovery in the biofield about how something might work for somebody, it's just like science. It's super fun. But how would people get a hold of you for a tuning, Kyle?
It's on my website. You go to consults. There's a few different options. There's a pit stop at the shop, which is what I'm used to. People just come in and we just chat and I make them something. I do my typical herbal consults, and then I have the biofield tuning, which involves that remedy that's mixed up for you from the tuning, as I was describing. And that's really fun. And tippycanoeherbs.com. You can apply the Interverse code. That's Interverse, all caps, for our products. And that's really fun. You get a discount for that. And that helps support Chance as well. And we are making right now, we're making the Aries box sets. I'm going to send you one, by the way. It's your birthday gift. And so that's one thing I'm really excited about, because we've been making these zodiacal box sets. And so the Aries one is coming up, and the Aries incense is so badass. It's got dragon's blood and cinnamon and copal. And oh my gosh, it's just lovely. It's really, really nice. And so burning some of that, just feeling the spark, feeling the spring, you know, let's get up and go energy and courage.
God, I've been feeling it.
Yeah, I call Pisces season pre-Aries. That's what I call it. So,
to me, it starts kicking in pretty strong about midway through March or a little sooner. And I've really grabbed that bull by the horns, so to speak, and making that pun intentionally, because the new thing that's kicked off for me in this getting startedness part of the year is the Inner World podcast with me and Dylan Sicoccio. It's the dream come true of prepared, deep research podcasts with Dylan that I've always kind of wanted to do with him. But, you know, he rightly withholds that level of dedication and commitment from people that aren't going to support directly, because it's topics that those who aren't invested in wanting to learn are sometimes a bit combative at the tapestry that pulling on that truth thread starts to weave, even though it's very beautiful, you know, but our members only side is super fun. You get to experience Dylan in a sort of a different light as you like. It feels like me and him are just hanging out, and it's the type of conversations me and him have off the air about the spiritual, mythological, linguistic syncretism that both of us are so into, rather than him, you know, talking to the audience or the masses so much. It's like, you kind of feel like you're getting into his heart a little bit. And he's a great guy. He has a huge heart, and the research has just been phenomenal. So if you want to give me a birthday present, give yourself a present. Be like Cucumber Bear, who during this stream signed up for the membership through YouTube, which is a new thing. You can do that. So here's my page. If you're on my page, go look for this join button right here. And that's $8 a month. It's a little more than my Patreon, because YouTube takes a much bigger fee. But if you like the YouTube interface, that's one way to do it. Or you can just join through Patreon. There's already two episodes of this Inner World show, and we've got a third one that I'm going to be putting out tomorrow that I'm super excited about. I'll play us out at the end with the intro sequence for that episode, just to get everybody fired up. But the third episode's about the Tor symbolism, like towers, the bull, Tar, and everything that might spiral out of starting to investigate that particular weave of how Hornism is part of it. Like, you know, Moses has horns, and the Tyrrhenians, who were the ancient Italians, also like Phoenician ancient Italians, how they were potentially called so because of towers. So we're really looking at like the connection between towers and bulls and all the other things related. You know, it's a huge circle that keeps coming back around to itself. It's a really good episode. This one clocked in at 2 hours and 15 minutes. So the whole thing is pure research too. It's like, you know, we do get into some tangents, but they're good tangents. Dylan's here. Actually, he says, "Holla, can't wait to hear the latest one. Chance is making some Michael Jordan level discoveries as well." Yeah, it's just like awesome teamwork. I feel like me and him have developed a really good way of building off of each other's insights, because with this stuff is like things are right there under your nose. You've got a lot of the, you got a lot of the data points, but sometimes just making one dot to dot connection all of a sudden reveals, I would like to solve the puzzle. You know, now you're ready. You got enough vowels or whatever. That's totally how this Inner World podcast feels. It's been awesome. So I'm really excited about that. And there's great content coming up on just the Innerverse side as well, which you get access to the extended shows if you join my Patreon or join this YouTube membership. So if you want to do yourself a favor, if you're interested in these things and you want to do me a birthday present, get yourself a membership. It's, you know, doesn't hurt to just try it out for a month. You're going to be very glad you did. You don't, there's nothing like it out there, especially the Inner World stuff. Nothing at all like it anywhere other than going to Dylan's Substack and reading, or, you know, getting the audiobooks, the Spirit World audiobooks, or reading the Spirit World books. But that's it. I just wanted to make sure everybody knows that that's an option, that it's crushing, like really crushing. And it's just going to get better as we keep pulling, pulling ourselves along on that stream of mystic insight. Super cool. Yeah. Kyle, you got anything else you want to tell people or just to respond?
Happy birthday, man. Love you. Happy cheers to the chat. It's been awesome. Always love hanging out with you. Love the invitation, man. Thanks so much. This is great.
I just appreciate that you were able to make some arrangements and pop in with this. It was a huge treat for me to see you and Eileen have a mind meld. That's honestly like the main, sometimes it's not like that, but my favorite thing about Vibrant is the potential to bring together podcast guests who would otherwise never interact in a podcast, you know? And that is, I think that's like the most fun thing about this. So if anybody,
thank you.
I'm actually down for suggestions. If anybody thinks of past guests on Innerverse or on Vibrant that you think would be cool to see interact, feel free to let us know in the Vibrant Telegram or in the Innerverse Telegram. I'm totally willing to entertain some wild combinations. I think that's always the value of this show, is plugging into some newness in that way.
Cool.
All right. Well, we'll take off, guys. Appreciate everyone being here. This was great. Gonna enjoy the rest of my birthday week. Birthday's on Friday. I got the Skull and Boner 322 birthday, making it cool. And all right. Love you, buddy. See you guys later.
Much love.
And this is the intro to Inner World episode 3. So, you know, get yourself fired up with some bulls and cows.